فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Brothers and sisters, we are talking about patience and the relationship between patience and perfection. The aim of exercising patience, to be brief, could be defined as the striving for perfection and exaltation of human beings. There is no doubt that human beings need to perfect themselves, need to do something to elevate themselves from that stage and go to another stage. In other words, patience is the opening of the fountainheads of talents of his inner self. His acquiring of super and noble characteristics overrides animalistic characteristics or lower qualities. So man has to transcend the lower qualities and move on towards the superior and noble characteristics. Perfection cannot be achieved without exercising patience. And patience is one of the best and noblest qualities that a man can achieve and man can have in his life. In order for a man to achieve perfection, to live a better life and to live a prosperous life, of course, the path is difficult. The path that he needs to traverse, that he needs to cover, is full of troubles and plenty of barriers, plenty of obstacles. And of course, each of these obstacles is sufficient to prevent the person who wants to achieve the pinnacle of perfection. If a person wishes to climb a mountain and reach the peak of the mountain, first of all, he must have the determination and the willpower to continue his journey towards that peak and that peak of the mountain. The climber cannot reach the peak or the summit without having to continue this journey and without having the willpower and the determination to do so. Perfection and exaltation cannot be achieved unless one continues to achieve perfection and continues to go through the obstacles and barriers. There are inner obstacles, there are inner and negative forces within the climber himself. Those are evil passions, those are evil desires, carnal desires. For example, a person's willingness to have comfort, to have an easy life, it can be a very big barrier, a very important obstacle for the individual to move forward. And of course, sometimes the inner problems, the inner forces, negative forces, can be coupled with the external forces, such as the troublesome state of affairs of the real world. There are thorns, there are rocks, there are, you know, cliffs, there are walls, which a person must, first of all, have a consideration. And of course, patience means to be able to stand up against all those obstacles and to conquer them with determination and with enthusiasm. And as I mentioned earlier, all Islamic duties, whether individual or collective, are means and steps. Of course, and these are means and steps needed to approach that goal of perfection. Hindrances must not discourage a person from continuing on the path towards perfection. For a person on a journey towards a distant city, traveling through the deserts, passing each habitation that lies in his path, for such a person, the journey towards such a city, of course, means that his journey is progressing, or he is getting closer to his final destination. No? If he is covering one mountain and one desert and goes to another, passes each habitation, this means progressing.
And this means that he is getting closer to his final destination. These intermediate aims or targets are preliminaries of the path towards reaching the real and final destination.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
There is a very important and very famous example given by the religious authorities. For example, the scholars of Islam sometimes give the example of someone who wants to go on top of a building. Now, if he wants to go on top of a building, he must use a ladder, you know. And a ladder is not the goal. It is a means. And it is a means by which the individual can reach the top of the building. Now, in order for a person to reach his goal, he has to cover the preliminaries. He must do the preliminaries and cover these stages. These are the necessary, the immediate goals, but these are the tools and these are the obstacles that must be done away with. Otherwise, the individual is unlikely to attain his goal and to reach his final destinations. I gave the example of the rooftop, and that's an example which can help you understand the concept of final destination. The concept, as I said, every individual has that final destination. The final destination, the final goal that we need to go and that we need to reach is perfection. And each step that we take, although it is a means for accomplishing the ultimate aim, is in itself, it is an accomplishment. And it is regarded as something closer to the final objective. We cannot reach the final objective unless we make those accomplishments and cover those preliminary stages. Those preliminaries are also obligatory by themselves. They are essential and they must be covered. Otherwise, it's very much difficult to reach the goal. The summary of this discussion is that in order to reach the goals and destination, the basic condition is the possession of patience, brothers and sisters. And the ability to utilize this sharp and decisive weapon, just as the road towards the accomplishment of the ultimate goal of perfection is full of obstacles, full of barriers, full of problems. Similarly, the path of Muslims fulfilling their Islamic duties and responsibilities are also full of these obstacles. And these paths are a means for reaching the final destination, of course. So, as I said, patience is a key factor and it is an important factor that helps the individual obtain and achieve his goals. And patience is something that makes problems and difficulties easier. And as I said, we have infinite internal and external obstacles, and these obstacles are scattered on the roads towards perfection. We should not be afraid of these internal and external obstacles. Laziness is there, indifference is there, selfishness is there, self-praise is there, pride, greed. These are the internal obstacles. And of course, external obstacles are also there. And just I gave the example of rocks, the example of thorns, the example of wolves, you know. Those are external obstacles which must be covered and completed. Otherwise, it's very unlikely to achieve the final goal and to achieve perfection and to attain the ultimate objective. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. every shade of palm, every closed hand, in us. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, in us. Every thought I have and every word I share, in us.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The notorious Ukrainian website Mirot Verets, meaning peacemaker. It publishes the names and addresses of those it deems to be enemies of Ukraine. The opening page shows pictures of dead Russian soldiers. On the list are domestic and foreign journalists, politicians and citizens that in some way they view to have aided or worked with pro-Russian forces in the country. Now, shamefully, they are adding children to the list. Faina Sevenkova, she is 13 years old, and has been writing about her experiences here in Donbass. After her name appeared on the list, she started to receive threats of physical violence online.
Are you worried about being on the website? Are you concerned that something might happen to you?
Yes, of course. A person I knew got to know my address and came to greet me for my birthday. These are good intentions, but something worse can happen. Websites like this shouldn't exist. They're illegal. They put many people in danger, children as well. I have a friend who was put on there because she wrote a poem about war.
Numerous journalists and public figures have been murdered after being put on the list, like Oles Bazina, who was shot near his home in Kiev, and Andrea Riccelli, an Italian journalist. After he was killed on the front line, the website posted liquidated over his photo. The Committee to Protect Journalists has previously written to the Ukrainian government asking them to condemn the unfounded and damaging allegations published on Mira Tervets and to clarify publicly that the Ukrainian Interior Ministry is dedicated to protecting journalists. The United Nations and Human Rights Watch have also condemned the site. Dianis Bitkonen, a Finnish journalist in Donbass, he's also on the list.
It's all against all international laws, and you shouldn't have right, any country shouldn't have a right to do that kind of like hunting list, kill lists of people and put it to the public, especially. It's a very brutal way how to cause people serious problems, and many have lost their lives because of being on that list.
The website clearly states it provides information for law enforcement authorities and special services. Ukrainian government ministers have praised the site, and it is actively used by the authorities to track and detain enemies of the state.
While Western media and governments try to whitewash the extremist or far-right neo-Nazi elements here in Ukraine, calling it Russian propaganda, for a website promoted, supported and used by the government that openly encourages violence towards children is a clear indication that Ukraine does have a serious problem with state-sponsored extremism.
They're basically encouraging people to kill people on the list?
Yeah. That's why I've been in since 2015. I certainly cannot fall to the Ukrainian hands because I am on that list with several pages even. But like the old saying is that the other one's terrorist is another one's freedom fighter. And hopefully all sense and truth and peace-loving people understand that all these people in that list are heroes.
To openly encourage violence towards children takes a special kind of evil, an evil that NATO countries, as they continue to pump Ukraine with money, weapons and political support, seem unwilling or incapable to challenge. Johnny Miller, Donbass.
As the United Nations is pushing the warring sides in Yemen to renew the truce, the Sana'a government has set new conditions to accept the extension for a third period of 6 months. The head of Yemen's national negotiating delegation, Mohammed Abdel Salam, said the United Nations is now required to ensure the payment of all salaries which are suspended since 2016.
If the leadership in Sana'a accept the extension of the truce, the commitment under the agreement should be implemented from the first day of the truce. The blockade must be lifted by land, sea and air. All roads must be opened, and the salaries of Yemeni employees must be paid. The oil wells must be preserved, and the suffering of prisoners should be ended. Without this, the truce has no meaning.
Experts say it is likely that Sana'a rejects the terms of the current truce and pushes the United Nations to further ease the suffering of Yemenis by dispersing salaries.
It is clear from the political and military statements of Sana'a that they will not accept the request to extend the ceasefire easily. There are new demands by Sana'a to enter a third period of the agreement. The United Nations must fulfill previous commitments and deal with the new conditions positively. Otherwise, there will be a military escalation.
Yemen's demands come against the backdrop of United Nations' failure to force the Saudi-led coalition to fulfill its commitments under the current agreement that was brokered by the world body in early April.
Disappointing and useless, that's how Yemenis describe the current UN brokered agreement. They say the Yemeni army should be prepared for different scenarios, including military escalation. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Due to their decision to sanction Russia over the unrest in Ukraine, France and the European Union are desperately trying to build energy stocks ahead of this winter. However, a record heat wave has created a surge in energy consumption, and that's prompted the government to informally call for the rationing of electricity. Citizens have been pushed to make an effort by cutting off Wi-Fi, unplugging appliances, and going without air conditioning. Many in poor neighborhoods say they expect their streets to go dark earlier and for their social services to be affected first. The West's sanctions campaign against Russia continues to force the average household into paying a steep price.
It's very difficult to see this crisis getting better by 2023. Finding alternative sources for gas and petrol will cause higher prices. Renewable energy will be more expensive. France isn't a big coal producer. France is already depleting its petrol and gas stocks. So every choice away from Russian energy is going to increase energy prices.
In order to have more control over the national energy grid, this week the government announced that they will totally renationalize the company Electricity of France. The energy giant runs all of the nation's nuclear power plants. Nuclear power provides nearly 70% of France's energy, the most of any country in the world. But a recent series of outages have caused nuclear power output to drop to its lowest level in nearly 30 years. Leaders of French energy corporations recently said that energy cuts are certain for this winter and that prolonged cold spells may threaten social and political cohesion.
The best solution is to negotiate with Russia to end the war in Ukraine. But we also need the leaders of the European Union to stop living in an isolated fishbowl where pushing for more war is a good idea. This energy and economic crisis is affecting all citizens.
A proposal to give the European Union the right to impose mandatory gas rationing across the bloc's 27 member countries was immediately shot down by the nations of Southern Europe this week. They called it the farthest-reaching power grab by Brussels this year. And it was especially controversial because individual national vetoes were not allowed under an emergency procedure employed by the leaders of the European Union. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
I'm heading with pro-Russian forces to the front line, just outside the city of Donetsk. We move at a fast pace, as there is constant incoming and outgoing at these positions. Suddenly we are told to run, as we reach open ground. The pro-Russians had just fired a heavy artillery barrage. The Ukrainians will most likely respond in kind. We reach the trenches. Opposing them is the Ukrainian stronghold of Adievka. For 8 years, the Ukrainians have been digging in, creating a complex network of underground bunkers. It will be one of the greatest challenges for Russia in this war so far. This fighter is an Abkhazi volunteer from the south of Russia. I asked him why he came to fight in Donbass.
It's our common sacred task to stand by Russia. We understand that an unjust war is going on. This territory is Russian land. Unfortunately, NATO and the USA are trying to make use of the collapse of the USSR. And you see the results of this work. Unfortunately, people die in war. And Russians and Ukrainians are fraternal peoples.
Now, about a month ago, I was in a frontline position not far from here, and it was pretty quiet. Now, the situation has changed as the pro-Russian forces here are trying to move forward into different positions. The Russian army is far to the north of here. There's a feeling that before making a full push, they will wait for the Russian army to come down and help to encircle Adiyevka. But for the moment, they're trying to keep the Ukrainian positions occupied. That's why there's so much incoming and outgoing from this position.
While NATO and Ukraine have been declaring for months that morale is low this side of the battle lines, all the pro-Russian fighters I've spoken to over 2 months here clearly have high morale. They are in no doubt they will take Adiyevka soon, as well as the rest of Donbass. And they believe they are fighting for a worthy cause.
They know perfectly well Russia doesn't target civilians, so they set up their positions where civilians are. We have sympathy for these civilians, but we will liberate them. And for those who force the Ukrainians to fight, for the Nazis, we do not have any sympathy. The card, as ever, was played by the Americans. It should be realized, Ukraine doesn't need this war. Their minds are not clear. They were left no choice but to fight by NATO.
While Ukraine is putting up a fierce defense in Donbass, the advantage is Russia's, with its overwhelming artillery superiority. As this conflict approaches its sixth month, soldiers are dying for each kilometer of land. Johnny Miller, Donbass.
Five rounds of voting by UK Conservative MPs have produced the final two candidates for party leader. It's now down to Tory party members to decide who will be the next leader of not just their own party, but the country too. The finalists, Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss, are lining up for their final showdown to become Boris Johnson's successor. The winner set to be announced on September the 5th, following a vote among the 160,000 or so members.
While members have been given a full month to vote, experience from past similar postal ballots suggests that many members will probably decide on who they want to vote for immediately, casting their ballots as soon as they get the chance to do so. So that means that the two candidates will have to rely on a rapid, hard-hitting initial start to their campaign in order to try and grab as many to their side as they possibly can.
The Conservative dogfight has raised concerns within Tory ranks that bitter divides are being exposed to the public, further damaging the party's overall image.
The comments made in the debate were really more personal in nature and really relating to people's performance and particular minutiae of policy. There aren't really substantial differences in the Conservative Party. There may be slight disagreements on, well, you shouldn't have put the taxes up, or you should have originally been a Leaver, but now they're all signed up to taking Britain through the Brexit process, which, contrary to some, is still continuing because there's unfinished business from leaving the European Union. But really the differences are slight and have been somewhat exaggerated.
The two candidates must now travel across the country and tackle questions from members. With the economy in crisis, party reputation on the rocks, and even greater issues with foreign policy, whoever wins will have serious work to do. Robert Carter, London.
They can make people laugh, impersonate voices, or sing. The stage for talents. The 5th International Stage Stars Festival brought together participants from 14 countries, including Iran, Afghanistan, India, and Turkey, to get on stage and perform in Iran's city of Rafsanjan.
I come from Bangladesh. I have participated in the hosting section. It's an amazing festival for the likes of me who pursue their dreams.
I am participating from Iraq. I'm so glad to have the opportunity to show my talent here in this event.
I have to represent our culture, Indian culture, and when I was in the start in the Tehran, then how I managed to live, because I didn't know the Persian language.
The contest has four categories of singing: stand-up comedy, show hosting, and sound impression. Contestants say this stage provides a shortcut to their success.
I'm so happy to be able to take part in this international talent contest. It provides a great opportunity for stage talent to be seen and shine in their favorite fields.
Stage Stars is a good chance for singers, sound impressionists, and stand-up comedians to be discovered. It's a big leg up for them.
The jury is comprised of top Iranian actors, TV presenters, and voice artists. They say only their real talents will be picked for the top prize.
This is a competition between the professionals of stage performance. There is no chance for a mistake. Each contestant here has a strong background in their expertise, so this stage is not the starting point, but a milestone for their careers.
One interesting part of this festival is the participation of international talents, who are mainly students from other countries who study in Iran. There's a separate competition dedicated for foreign participants.
All of the contestants, even those who come from foreign countries, must perform in Persian. However, organizers plan to include other languages in the upcoming editions of the festival. The top performances from each category will win the golden mic, plus a cash prize. Organizers say this contest seeks to scout for those who really have a knack for stage performance and to bring them under the spotlight. So to those who nab the golden mic here, this stage is a springboard toward their ambitions. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Rafsanjan.
The European Commission is asking EU member states to reduce demand for gas by 15% until spring. For now, this is just a request, but the Commission warns it might well become a demand.
The 15% are aspirational. It's a voluntary goal. It's aspirational. And in case that we are in an emergency, then the target becomes binding.
The EU claims it's concerned that Russia will cut off all gas supplies in retaliation for sanctions imposed by the West over the war in Ukraine.
Shortfalls will not just affect the countries where the shortfalls happen. They will affect every single member state because they will have serious consequences on our economy. And nobody can escape that consequence.
The truth is, Russia has fulfilled all its energy supply contracts to the EU and vows to continue doing so. Some analysts believe the US and its transnational companies are behind the hysteria because they want to take business from Russia's Gazprom Energy Corporation.
The whole rhetoric today is based on imaginary threat, which was never confirmed by Russian authorities, because on contrary, Russian authorities said on many occasions, and including the President Putin, that Gazprom will honour their contracts.
Since Russia's so-called special military operation was launched in Ukraine last February, the EU has been importing large amounts of liquefied natural gas from the United States. It's an expensive process. The bloc is also signing contracts with countries in Africa and the Middle East. During a technical briefing here for journalists, officials confirmed to me there has been no contact with Iran on increasing EU energy supplies, despite the Islamic Republic having enormous oil and gas reserves. In this regard, analysts say the EU continues to bow to US pressure, and it's ordinary citizens who are paying the price for that. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
You don't have to be a financial expert to know your pound just isn't going as far. The price of everything has gone up. Living in the UK has become more expensive.
I've had to cut down on a lot of stuff. I can do shopping only maybe once, twice a month because finances are not that great. See, most money goes on bills, petrol, to get the kids to school, come back and, you know, make sure the house is in order because obviously the kids have to eat.
We've seen a dramatic increase in it whereby we could go and spend X amount, and that would be for 7 days. We're now going, actually, that's not even covering the whole week now.
The things contributing to the high rate of inflation, soaring energy, fuel, and food prices, driven by a number of factors.
Those causes are very often related to Ukraine and Putin and the war, because what we know is that has pushed up gas and electricity prices. There are also transport costs have been going up. because of logistical problems following the coronavirus. Then, of course, we've got the problem of Brexit.
And the worst is yet to come. Britain's central bank has warned price rises could hit 11% later this year, but will come down in the year after. Experts say the UK could be at risk of recession.
The Bank of England's got it wrong as usual. So it will come down, but it will be much more persistent than anybody is anticipating. And to get it back down to 2% could take at least 3 years, not two, not one. And it's going to take a long time, actually, because it's now embedded in the system. And people will want to catch up. You see, the public sector, they're going to take a big real wage cut this year, probably, but they're not going to tolerate that the following year.
The government says one way to contain inflation is to suppress wages. Prices are going up, but incomes are not keeping up. That has meant sweeping rail strikes over demands for higher pay. Some public sector workers, such as teachers and medics, have received a pay rise, but below the inflation rate.
These are tough times for everybody, but it's those on the lowest incomes who are feeling the pinch. According to one study, more than 4 million, that's one in six British households, are worse off now than they were last year, a number that could change come the cold season. Saeed Purizab, London.
Illegal and politically motivated. That's how angry protesters describe a Swedish court ruling sentencing Iranian national Hamid Nouri of life in jail over participating in killing imprisoned dissidents. Nouri is a former judiciary staff who has been convicted by the Stockholm District Court on July 14th of taking part in the 1988 execution of members of the anti-Iran terror group Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization, while he served as an assistant to the deputy prosecutor at the Gohardasht prison outside the Iranian city of Karaj. Protesters here warn that the Swedish verdict has sent negative signals to Iranians.
We gathered outside the Swedish embassy today to demand an end to Sweden's circus trial of Hamid Nouri.
Sweden has no jurisdiction to rule on a case that's considered a domestic issue in Iran. Besides, all of the witnesses who testified against Mr. Nouri were members of a terror group and have never seen Nouri in person in Iran.
The accusations were leveled against Nouri by members of the Mujahideen-e-Khalq terror group, or MKO. Protesters here say the MKO itself has committed countless war crimes, from aiding former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein in the 1980s Iran-Iraq war to the serial killings of Iranian statesmen and civilians in the early years after the 1979 Islamic Revolution. The MKO was on the U.S. and EU's blacklist of terrorist organizations before both countries delisted the group in 2012 and 2009, respectively.
The MKO have the blood of at least 12,000 Iranians on their hands. They have no position amongst Iranians, and we call them the hypocrites here in Iran. So I want to tell the Swedish prosecutor that a ruling is tantamount to approving the crimes committed by MKO terrorists against Iranians.
Iran says Hamid Nouri has for the past 32 months been kept in abysmal conditions in a solitary confinement in Sweden. Hamid Nouri was arrested upon arrival in Sweden at Stockholm Airport in 2019 and was immediately imprisoned. A life sentence in Sweden generally means a minimum of 20 to 25 years in prison. Nouri can appeal the verdict.
Protesters here called the whole shebang as a political game aimed at smearing the Islamic Republic's justice system. They described the Swedish ruling as rabble-rousing, which whitewashes terrorism and gives a green light to the ill intentions of the MKO against Iranians. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
The clear message here is that the Israeli regime may target Palestinian children as it pleases, as there will be no legal, political, or moral accountability for its actions, says Ramzi Baru, journalist, in an article published under the heading, "The UN is Failing Palestinian Victims." Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. We regret we failed to protect you. This was part of a statement issued by United Nations human rights experts on July 14th, urging the Zionist regime to release Palestinian prisoner Ahmad Manasra, only 13 years old at the time of his arrest and torture by Israeli regime forces. Manasra is now 20 years old. His case is a representation of the Zionist regime's overall inhumane treatment of Palestinian children. The expert's statement was forceful and heartfelt. It accused the Zionist regime of depriving young Manasra of his childhood, family environment, protection, and all the rights he should have been guaranteed as a child. It referred to the case as hunting, considering Manasra's deteriorating mental conditions. The statement went further, declaring that this case is a stain on all of us as part of the international human rights community. Condemning the Zionist regime for its ill-treatment of Palestinian children, whether those under siege in war-stricken Gaza or under military occupation and apartheid in the rest of the occupied territories in the West Bank and East Al-Quds, is commonplace. Yet somehow the Zionist regime was still spared a spot on the unflattering list issued annually by the United Nations Secretary General, naming and shaming governments and groups that commit grave violations against children and minors anywhere in the world. Oddly, the report does recognize the Zionist regime's horrific record of violating children's rights in Palestine. It details some of these violations, which UN workers have directly verified. This includes 2,934 grave violations against 1,208 Palestinian children in the year 2021 alone. However, the report equates between the Zionist regime's record, one of the most dismal in the world, and that of other parts of the world. Though the deliberate harming of a single child is regrettable regardless of the circumstances or the perpetrator, it is mind-boggling that the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres found it appropriate to equate the systematic violations carried out by the Zionist regime's military as a matter of course and the violations in other parts of the world. Worse, Guterres' report went further to reassure the Israelis that they are on the right track by stating that so far this year we have not witnessed a similar number of violations, as if to suggest that the right-wing Israeli cabinet of Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid has purposely changed its policies regarding the targeting of Palestinian children. Of course, there is no evidence of this whatsoever. On June 27th, Defense for Children International Palestine, DCIP, reported that the Zionist regime had been intensifying its aggression against children in the West Bank and East Al-Quds since the beginning of 2022. DCIP confirmed that as many as 15 Palestinian children were killed by Israeli regime forces in the first 6 months of 2022, almost the same killed in other regions in the previous years. This number includes 5 children in the occupied city of Jenin alone. The Zionist regime even targeted journalists who attempt to report on these violations, including Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Aghaleh, who was killed on May 11th, and Ali Samoudi, who was shot in the back on the very same day. Much more can be said, of course, about the besiegement of hundreds of thousands of Palestinian children in the Gaza Strip, known as the world's largest open-air prison, and many more in the occupied West Bank. The lack of basic human rights, including life-saving medicine and, in the case of Gaza, clean water, hardly suggests any measurable improvement in the Zionist regime's track record as far as Palestinian children's rights are concerned. If you think that the UN report is a step in the right direction, think again. 2014 was one of the most tragic years for Palestinian children where, according to a previous UN report, 557 children were killed and 4,249 were injured, the vast majority of whom were targeted during the Israeli regime war on Gaza. Human Rights Watch stated that the number of killed Palestinians was the third highest in the world that year. Still, Israeli regime was not blacklisted on the UN list of shame. The clear message here is that the Israeli regime may target Palestinian children as it pleases, as there will be no legal, political, or moral accountability for its actions. This is not what Palestinians are expecting from the United Nations, an organization that supposedly exists to end armed conflicts and bring peace and security for all. For now, the message emanating from the world's largest international institution to Manasra and the rest of Palestine's children will remain unchanged. We regret we failed to protect you.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station Choo Choo Kachoo. It's the Youth Station for you.
Yes, of course, and I'm here. This is Asma. You're listening to IRIB English Radio.
Sister Asma, it's good to have you. And this is Mudathar.
Of course, the pleasure is all mine.
Sister, so the taxi picked me up to bring me to the studio today. And I was late because I was sleeping. So I have a serious problem, like a serious problem. I just can't wake up in the morning.
That's very true. Same in here.
Maybe it's a literature thing.
I don't know, but maybe yes. Because we had to read novels and plays at night because we didn't have time and they were so huge.
So maybe that's why, because our minds work in a certain way. And when nighttime comes, you get more excited. You're like, well, let me think about this. You start contemplating more and stuff.
Yeah. Because most of the literary people I've met in my life are like this.
Oh, they're owls?
Yes, they're owls.
Wow, okay.
And they hate mornings.
Uh-huh.
Yes, because it's very difficult to get out of bed. But you know what? Up until some periods of my life, I was so happy that I do everything at night. And it was just like a sort of a thing that my body starts working better when the moon is in the sky.
Really?
Yes. It actually has got awards for itself.
Lunatic.
No. No. A very technical word. It was very nice. Uh-huh. It described the people who can work better when the moon is in the sky.
I thought I was the only one.
No. You're not alone.
I thought I was a lunatic as well, because lunar actually is to do with the moon, because somehow the moon affects people's behavior.
Yeah.
But it never made sense to me, because I'd have like the most fantastic day and then I'd go out and be like, oh, it's a full moon.
Yes.
That's why. So yes. I wasn't even aware that the moon was full, but it had an effect on me. And it's so strange, because the moon doesn't get bigger or smaller per se. I mean, maybe a little bit.
Yes.
Right? But the fact that it's full, or if it's a crescent moon, why does that affect you? It's really bizarre, isn't it?
Of course it is, but totally. If you see it or not, when the sky is black and it turns into this dark color, then some people start work better. It has been scientifically even proved. Some people can work better at night, and some people can do better during the day.
Okay, now here's my problem, okay? While that's the case...
Yes.
The Holy Prophet is Uswatun Hasana. He's the best example for us.
Exactly.
He used to sleep really early for maybe an hour, maybe 2 hours. He used to sleep very less, right? But then he would wake up for Salatul Layl. Nowadays, like for the night prayers.
Yeah.
Now, the only time I get to my night prayers is if I stay awake the entire night.
That is very true.
You know, and this morning, the taxi driver called me and I was like, I tried to change my voice. You know, when you wake up, you're croaky.
Yes.
And I tried to change it. I was like, I'll be right there. And he was, as soon as I sat down in the car, he was like, you were sleeping, weren't you?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah.
Got it.
It's horrible. You got to wake up in the morning.
It actually is terrible.
Okay, there's so many hadith about waking up in the morning, right? Your wrist will be there if you wake up.
You know what?
In the morning.
Many times I've tried to change it, but still I'm hopeless.
Me too. I am pathetic.
Well, that's very sad. You know, I can't change it. I've
Neither
turned into
You're
this person who
person.
Cannot just sleep all the night.
So there's, do you know what?
Is there any way for us to be saved?
I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you, like, seriously. So the Quran says, "Wadduha wa layli idha saja."
Yeah.
Right, by the brilliant morning brightness.
Yes.
And by the night when it covers, like a blanket.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this surah actually is Surah Duha, and it relieves a person's sadness. It actually makes you happier.
Yeah.
The more you recite it.
So we are actually talking about habits.
You're supposed to wake up. Your habit is supposed to be to see the morning brightness and to sleep at night.
You are just supposed, but who is going to practice that?
Lots of people practice that. I bet the producer practices that.
Yes, I'm sure about that.
Right? There's certain types of people, and it's really interesting that we're both literary students, and we both are, and you're saying that a lot of the literature students are also like that at university. Maybe it is a certain type of person.
Let's go for a little break and then we'll be back. Thank you for listening to us and giving your ears and attention.
This concept of your speech keep getting better. Maybe your thought patterns get better at night. They get more powerful.
Yes, maybe.
Right, because Allah says in the Quran, the night time or night prayers are ahsanu qila.
Yes,
they are the best for vocalizing.
Yes, that is very nice.
Honestly,
it was nice to mention that.
The most.
So we are good for something.
Maybe. Maybe we are good for something. They should host these shows in the middle of the night. Then we'd be like,
exactly,
top of our
yes.
game.
It would be fire.
But yeah, it would definitely change my life though if I was able to do it, because risk,
yes.
sustenance is a portion for a person more if they are if they wake at
and
a certain time in the
also
morning.
Also consider the physical health, you
yes.
know? I guess I'm getting older by time.
Oh,
since
yeah.
I'm not getting enough of a sleep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
my cells are not getting enough of collagen to renew themselves.
We need vitamin D. We need vitamin D. And you get vitamin D from the sun, right?
Yes, yes.
And there's something about sunlight itself.
Yes. It,
okay, here's another thing. There are certain times which are makruh, disliked, for you to sleep.
Yeah.
One of those times is the morning time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for example, if I stay awake up until Fajr and then I sleep after the Fajr prayers, that's makruh.
Yeah, that's bad.
I don't like telling people this because it might make life really difficult for some people.
Yes.
But I did that. Right?
It would make life impossible for some
yeah,
people.
Yeah, yeah. So, for example, I did that this morning,
mm-hmm.
right? I stayed up until Fajr and then I slept just after Fajr. It's makruh, though. I shouldn't be
yeah.
doing it. It's not good.
Yeah, that is.
There,
for the bad habits that we have, do you have any recommendations? Though we're not the right people to talk about that.
That would
but...
just make me a hypocrite, wouldn't it? It's strange because you know what you can do to change it,
mm-hmm.
but you just don't implement it.
But, you know, for this is my weakness, you know? It's my Achilles heel.
Uh-huh.
Sleeping is just something that I have no control over. It. But there are some other things that I found them just useless and bad for me. Then I stopped doing them.
Yeah.
And actually, it's not just like a stop, like a full stop. No, it's just that I tried for them and I think I'm getting better by time.
Like
one
what?
Of them was overthinking.
Aha, yes. How do you stop that?
Well, I have stuffed myself with translation and uh-huh. I cannot think about any other thing. So I am trying to engage myself with things.
Because you're studying translation, right?
Yes. And I hate translation, by the way. But I'm doing uh-huh. it because it keeps me away from all the thoughts that I have. And they kill me, actually. You know, it's a devastating thing when you have a lot of thoughts that pop into your head. You don't want them to be there, but they are there. Then you have to fight with them. So the best way is actually to get engaged in different sort of activities in a way that you would no longer have time for thinking about it even.
Yeah, because that thinking kind of it keeps you awake at night, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does keep you awake at
yeah.
night because a lot of the time you're thinking so much that you can't sleep.
Yes.
And then it tires your brain out and then you go to sleep at the wrong time.
See? The mystery is solved.
Yes, yes. I think it might
yeah.
have a big part.
But now I have to stay awake at night.
Why?
Because I brought that to myself.
That
I'm translating a book which is 2,000 paged book.
Oh my God. What's it called?
It's Les Misérables.
You're translating Les Misérables?
Yes.
To Farsi?
Yes.
No way. I thought it's already been translated.
It has been translated, but my translation is going to be different.
Excellent. Do you know that's Imam Khomeini's favorite book?
Really?
Yeah.
So nice to know that.
He said it's his favorite novel.
Very interesting.
The themes in there are all to do with revolution.
Because the
poverty.
Writer has mm-hmm. got a lot to do with freedom and
yeah.
The free people. So when I translate it, I will give one to you.
I watched the movie because
yes.
I was like, okay.
Movie
is
easier.
Yeah, I know. I'm really lazy, isn't it? But when I found out that it was his favorite book, I was like, okay, I need to see why. And my God, that really
so
is.
So don't read this until I finish my book.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Maximum 9 o'clock. Have a small dinner. Go to sleep. How many hours? 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, three. That will give you 6 hours.
Oh, don't count them. It would embarrass me. But you know, I would tell you something. I have a better performance at night.
So do I.
Even during the time that we had exams, I usually used to do things during night. And,
me too.
And I did wonders.
And that's my question, though.
Mm-hmm.
Does Allah want us to do that? For example, I'll give you another example, okay? Dreams. Mm-hmm. There are certain types of dreams. One type of dream is a divine dream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you want divine dreams, which actually give you a window into the future, where you see the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wasalam and the prophets, for example, you have to sleep in the night.
Yes. Well, that's a very hard job to do. It's a drudgery for me. Yeah.
I hate waking up in the morning.
Me too.
I just hate it. It just feels
Why mornings?
Horrible. Yeah.
Why do we have to do everything at morning?
I don't know. Mornings, the worst time of the week is the morning of Monday. It's just the worst.
Why Monday?
Monday, well, in the UK, it was the first day back after the weekend, right? Yes. Saturday, Sunday is what we get
off. So Saturday is for us. The morning of Saturday is...
Saturday doesn't feel that bad, though.
Yes, it feels.
Oh, it does, yeah. But the point is that morning, it's just like, ugh. But that morning is important. I really envy morning people because they're just naturally into the rhythm that Allah has created of this universe. Yeah. And Allah will test them in a different way. I think our test is...
Yeah, we say that in order to relieve ourselves.
Yeah. inshallah, may Allah help us to reform our habits.
You know, in one of the plays where I remember there was a nice ending. There was a very nice sentence that ended that play. The woman said, "We all shall find peace. So we may find peace one day."
Inshallah, inshallah. I think that's a good place to end it. That's all we have time for?
Yes, yeah? That is.
Dear listeners, that's all we have time for today. We hope that you enjoyed the discussion, inshallah. And we'll see you next time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I have what I have. My love is strong. Because of you, in weakness I am braver. My defender and my savior. My giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance. Aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love is strong.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.